Hello, everybody. My name is Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Paco Lolo. For those of you who don't know, Paco Lolo is Hawaiian slang for crazy tobacco, also known as marijuana. But this show is about removing the stereotypes, the stigmas, and the taboos that are connected to this plant by talking to special guests who are in different industries and diving deep into the world of cannabis. Today, my first guest for this first episode, very good friend of mine, Sammy Snips, co-founder of Snips Cannabis Company, featured twice by High Times Magazine. Sam's viral social media campaigns have reached hundreds of thousands of viewers, potential distributors, and medical patients. Alongside hearings with Maine legislators, Sam has been meeting with Maine business owners, establishing wholesale distribution networks through Maine's medical marijuana program, a trustworthy name not only among the tight-knit community Maine dispensary owners. Sam also has a long list of both in-state and applicable out-of-state medical patients. And on a side note, Sam and I worked side by side at a regenerative living organic soil farm. So today he's going to be speaking to us about legislation. He's going to be speaking to us about cultivation and most importantly, why he brought himself into this space. Sam, thank you for coming on to Planet Paco Lolo. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here. It's a pleasure. I'm doing great and I'm excited to dive in and start talking.
Wonderful. So I want to start with this, the Sammy Snips. When we were working side by side on the farm, and here's a picture of Sam, by the way, here. Working on the farm here. Let me get him up there. You could see him right there. That was a beautiful farm experience, right? That was something special. And the name Sammy Snips originated there, and now it's turned into something now where you've just carried it along into your own kind of realm. So tell us a little bit about Snips Co. and yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you were saying, we work side by side on this farm where we were really diving in on the organic side of things, really working with the soil. And it was a really amazing experience, just, you know, getting my foot in the door. And now what we've taken Snips is just to a whole other level, where it just started out as a silly little thing where I've always got snippers in my hands and I'm always cutting something. I'm always doing something with the plant, whether it's, you know, doing IPM regimens, whether it's cleaning up the plants, training them, whatever it is I found, I always had snippers in my hand and I always needed them for something. And
Tell me a little bit about this, because what I like to do in the first segment of the show is to talk about current events, right? What's going on in the cannabis world, right? So Planet Paco Lolo, we're trying to uncover the world of cannabis. And one thing that brought us together, obviously, is the plant. But then through that, we learned the medical marijuana program, which was something that, as far as Maine goes, was one of the first states, actually before California, although California turned recreational before them and Maine after the fact, which says a lot about the state. But in a way, I think that you and I could really bounce back a lot about medical program. So tell me a little bit about the Maine medical marijuana program and how you're vested in that.
Yeah. So the Maine medical marijuana program is the greatest program in the entire world right now, as far as medical cannabis and having access to that cannabis. In many places, not just in the country, but all over the world, we're finding that the craft community of cannabis is being pushed out by larger companies, larger corporations that are able to work in different states simultaneously. And what Maine is uniquely doing right now is we're fighting back. We're fighting back and we're fighting for small business owners' right to essentially operate here in Maine at a reasonable level. And it's, in my opinion, winning. And we are the only state where we have such open dialogue with our legislators. And I gotta say, it's impressive. I'm a skeptic person when it comes to our government, but I'm impressed with how open our dialogue has been in Maine. And I hope it continues to be open so that we can always have a transparent program that ultimately takes care of our patients.
That's a great point. And I do remember that you know, being there, we had the farm for 3 years. And then after that, I had left. My feeling was, the recreational program is going to now come in. I felt like, and especially because I had my wife and children in New Jersey, I said, let me go back to New Jersey and begin the consultative approach and helping people in New Jersey with licensure application, branding, marketing, and all that fun stuff. Now on the farm, you and I created Buddha Brothers, and we had a great run, and we created some, what I thought to believe, some of the most wonderful cannabis made with love, under the most highest standards when it came to producing cannabis, which when you're thinking of medical marijuana in comparison to recreational, I think the quality might tend to go down in most scenarios, not in all, in some it might go up. But in what was really important to me, what you said before, is that the state itself, Maine, it's very much for the rights of the citizens, right? So that's where this came in. When I think about being in New Jersey, I think too much of the focus in New Jersey is the license and not so much the business. Whereas in Maine, it's the other way around. And because of that, you see what you would see, which is a community of people that support each other, that believe in the plant and believe that it should be kept within those communities. So, you know, speaking upon that, maybe in a little bit more detail, when you think of the medical marijuana program, it's almost boutique, right? You had used the word craft. And so is there a fear in Maine, because spending a lot of time there wearing my Oxbow hat there, you know that there is a fear of getting away from craft. Maine kind of prides itself on that. So maybe speak a little bit on that as far as craft medical as opposed to mainstream recreational and how that might have effect in the state of Maine.
Absolutely. So, the fear is very real up in Maine right now. People are scared, patients and caregivers alike, because they're worried about the changes and the proposals that they're trying to do. It's not looking good in a sense. So people are definitely worried. As far as, does that mean we should all lose hope and give up and go, woe is me? Absolutely not. That's what's nice here, is that the state is doing, at least from my perspective, everything it can to keep the small business owners in the conversation. So yes, there is a lot of fear. There's a lot of misinformation, of course, going around, as in everything these days, but it's something that people are panicking about up here. And I don't believe that we're going in the direction of the other states. I have to hope that Maine is going to take a new route, a new avenue here that no one else has really done in our country. And I have to hope that, you know, we can establish that kind of relationship with our legislators to allow the stakeholders, such as caregivers like myself, to have a say in how laws are written.
Well, I think then what's really important then is to maybe we should expand upon this for the show to kind of point out to the audience. I'm pulling up the article that you had sent me. 3,084 registered caregivers in the state who sell medical marijuana to those who have a recommendation from a doctor or a nurse practitioner to use cannabis. So you've got over 3,000 medical caregivers, and yet now only maybe, let's say, less than 10 recreational facilities could come in. And essentially that will just wipe out, I don't know, 2/3 of those medical growers that have spent a long time creating client relationships, patient relationships, building a facility that obviously takes time, energy, and money. I think it's important to illustrate this to people that while there is a push for these states to go recreational, right? Because everybody's like, well, it's great. It's rec. You know, I'm New Jersey now. I can go and drive around with 3 ounces in my car. I feel great about that. Back in the day, 1 gram would put you down. So see how that legislation, in a way, yes, of course, it'll entice people to go in that direction. But the average everyday consumer doesn't know that. So the other thing that they had pulled up in the article that was interesting to me was the fact that they were talking about the multi-state operators, MOS. And if you are a medical, caregiver, right, the word MOS, or the acronym MOS, doesn't strike fear, but it strikes a little bit of resentment. because and essentially these multi-state operators are the ones that are coming in that are, you know, taking over and putting and taking everybody's hard work out of it, right? Yeah. You come up there, you unroot yourself, you plant, no pun intended, a new life up there in Maine because you believe in the state, the standards of what it's done, the way that it holds itself. Not to mention that environmentally, it's wonderful for growing cannabis. Okay. Yeah. And then on top of that, you put in all the hard work, as do many other caregivers and other people in other states. They build the client relations with the people in your municipality. Why? Because we know that the individual municipalities vote on where these dispensaries and cultivation places can be zoned and actually be located. And then that takes time to build that relationship. And after all the licensure and all the heavy lifting is put into place, and then those smaller mom and pop shops start to realize that they still have to pump money in it to get through that hard period, the multi-state state operator comes in and swoops it. They buy that name, and then all of a sudden you wonder why Curaleaf has 23, you know, locations in 23 different states. And that's just, of course, one. So when we think of that, who are you fearful of maybe the multi-state operator coming in? Or how is, you know, you're in these advocacy groups in Maine and you're talking to these people. What's the overall vibe right now currently that people are throwing out there?
The overall vibe is that these recreational companies cannot compete with the medical caregivers on a quality standard. Now, whether or not that's true is yet to be proven, but there is definitely fear as far as caregivers worrying about their businesses being competed on. Me, I'm the craft boutique, high-end, top shelf of the top shelf, highest you can get as far as quality. And I'm not worried because I don't believe that on any larger scale that they're doing, they could compete with mine. So me personally, I'm not terribly worried, but I am worried for the program as a whole and what the repercussions of these changes may become.
And to, I guess, bring it to the bigger perspective, as I always try to tell people, you'll either go to ShopRite or you go to Trader Joe's.
Exactly.
If you want your recreational mainstream Budweiser cannabis and you're willing to pay for that and get that, which, by the way, it's still not cheap, then you're going to get that. But if you want something boutique, if you're a connoisseur or a gangier, as opposed to a sommelier, you would taste the difference. You would know what you like. You would know what strains you enjoyed because of the effects that they had on you. You would have been somebody that had put the time in to really research it and understand the plant more. Because I think the thing is, it's people look at, is it just that? Well, it's just the plant. So, and then those are the same people that clump and categorize it as a drug. They have to realize that there's a lot more to that, that it's not just, it's not a drug at all. It's a plant and it has medicinal qualities to it. And I think the other discussion is that many times people use rec as a way to medicate, but we can get into that. We're going to take a little break and it'll kind of segue into what we're going to talk about next: indoor, outdoor growing, boutique, craft, so on and so forth. So, this was a great first segment, Sam. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to see what we have to say, because right now you're in that space. You're now with the indoor and the outdoor, where you and I both, I think, originally were living outdoor soil, sun grown. That's all I want. That's all I want to hear. So when we come back after this break, we'll talk a little bit more about the indoor and the outdoor cultivation and see how it all ties in from there. All right, everybody. Thank you. That was a nice piece.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Thank you. Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Everyone, we're back. I'm Johnny Tsunami. This is Planet Paco Lolo, your world of cannabis. If you missed the first segment, we talked with Sammy Snips, I should say, of Snips Co., my good friend Sam Vong. He was somebody who worked with me on my medical marijuana farm up in Maine. He then decided I'm going to stay here as I shot my way back to New Jersey and planted his roots, no pun intended, started creating his own brand, which is flourishing today. Actually, this picture behind me is a Sam photo with a little bit of Photoshop there, but that was our cannabis. And I think it's very befitting because it's an island in the middle of the sea. And, you know, we're a planet all among our own. Cannabis people are an island by themselves right now. Sam, thank you for coming back. And we had a great first segment. I thought that was a lot of fun. So in the second segment, we like to kind of cover the science, the business, the method behind what we do, depending on what we do in the cannabis space. So Sam, obviously being a MMP, licensed practitioner to grow medical marijuana, grows both indoor and outdoor. So I wanted to kind of spend this segment to let people see the difference in how we could talk really about this stuff probably for the next 3 hours and debate about which is better. But let's start here. Here's my first question. Which do you prefer, indoor or outdoor cannabis?
As far as smoking or growing it?
That's okay. Let's do both. So for consumption purposes, let's start there.
For consumption purposes, I typically go with indoor cannabis. Not because I don't love outdoor cannabis. It's just that it's kind of connected to both answers where we live in Maine. And the climate here isn't forgiving. It's hard to grow outside in Maine. You have a very, very quick season. And so, you know, for me personally, I like smoking the indoor. In California, it would probably be a different answer, though. And that goes to both kind of growing and smoking it, is that really you have to know what your climate is. And Maine is not the best climate for growing outdoor cannabis. And once you know that, you can understand it and improve things, such as the way I'm doing right now, where I'm using special genetics that will be finished by the end of August. So I don't have to deal with September, October, with all the mold and all the fluctuations of the weather. And that's a big part of it here in Maine. And people need to understand that if you live in a very good climate like California, sure, You can be growing outside all year round. You can have excellent quality. Everything is just right. The humidity and the temperature are all perfect and beautiful. In Maine, that's not the case. And you have to work hard here to grow outside. And that's what's the most impressive part about the things we've been doing on the farm. You know, what we were doing together and what I'm doing now as well is growing outside in Maine and just kicking butt, you know? It's a war. Yeah. And we're fighting it.
And in a way, it makes you a better grower, right? So, you know, Tsunami, right? I love to surf. People who know me know I love to surf. I surf in New Jersey a lot. It's terrible. It's not the best place to surf. You get a very small window during the season, just like you do for growing cannabis in Maine. And the waves are all over the place. So you have to be able to hop on a wave real quick and be able to do that. And that's the same thing with growing cannabis in Maine, because you'll have 3 days of crappy weather and you have to hop on that, adjust, make the right adjustments that you can do whatever, and then make the best out of that. Now, the catch 22 with that, we always said this, is that it might be a very fickle season, but it's a very powerful and robust season. So it's like when the earth comes to life and that energy comes out, it's coming out. I mean, we know this, spring and summer. I mean, it's like all of a sudden the foliage is like, boom, it's there and it's gone. And so it made me a better surfer to surf in unfavorable conditions. I would say likewise, it probably made you a better cultivator for growing in unfavorable conditions, which probably transferred over into the cannabis realm. So we grew indoor, but we didn't do necessarily to the degree of where you are now. So fill me in. Give me up to speed now. Give me some of the Sammy Snips indoor. I want to hear more.
Yeah. So, I dabbled a long time with the idea of renting warehouse space, which could be a whole episode in itself, just talking about that and the options that I had to choose from. And ultimately, I chose a similar model that you and I had chose years back, where we own the farm, we own it ourselves, and we retrofit what's here to make work. Mm-hmm. And I was able to find a really great property that had an auto mechanic garage on the premises, a 5-bay garage. Insulated, heated, draining floors, everything was just so perfect and turnkey that it was too good to be true. So we have retrofitted about a 3,000 square foot 5-bay garage into multiple rooms, cultivation rooms, both in vegetative state and also in the flowering state. So we're doing both, and we're kind of doing at the same time multiple grows perpetually.
Okay. So with that being said, what medium are you using?
I'm using living soil, similar to what we were doing on the farm. We got a base mix and, you know, we do our thing and we add the right things that we need to it to make it good. But, we're letting that soil microbiology do the work for us. And that's kind of the big part about living soil, is that I'm not spending $20,000, $45,000 a year on nutrients. My soil is good to go. And after every grow, I'll amend it a little bit. It's very, very cost-friendly doing that. And so, yeah, I'm doing living soil organics, both indoor and outdoors.
Which is incredible, because the majority don't.
Not anymore. No.
So that being said, why have you kind of upheld that tradition? Because that says to me a lot about who you are as a grower, because you know how the sun-grown growers will say, well, Sammy grows inside, so he's not one of our ilk, right? It's funny how it becomes divided like that. We are, I guess, just in general a polarized nation. It's like we just have to find the counter extreme to everything and every person. We find ourselves, and then we find the extreme of ourselves. And so in the cannabis world, the indoor-outdoor growers, obviously, I mean, there's a straight-out battle going on between those two. But what's important to me, typically what you will find with indoor growing is that most of those indoor growers will switch to a medium like coco, deep water culture. And by medium, just so we can educate the audience, that's just the material that the roots of the plant are sitting in. So what are you choosing to let that plant absorb its nutrients from? So what's really special about Sam is that typically indoor growers will do more of an artificial, even if you want to call cocoa, you know, it may not be artificial. It's, you know, strips of coconut fiber. But at the end of the day, you're still using a lot of nutrients. So there's where the artificial sense comes in there. So give me a little bit more, because that actually, to me, is very exciting that you upheld that end to the indoor, which I think actually makes you more craft in a way. So yeah. Please elaborate on that. Why did you stick with that soil? Because it has its own things that you have to deal with, but please allow shed light on it.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest ways to grow. You know, these days it's a little bit more difficult as far as dialing it in. But when I saw firsthand the quality of organic living soil cannabis, there's just no going back. There really is no going back. And all of my patients will tell you the exact same thing, that I'm not hating on anyone. You can grow in any medium. You can grow some really incredible stuff. But there's a difference. You can taste that love, that high quality. And every time I get organic bud, I can tell that it's organic. I can tell that there wasn't bottled nutrients going into it. And there's nothing wrong with bottled nutrients. There's plenty of people that are just doing an amazing job and doing it their way. That's just not for us and the way we run our company. We want everything to be as clean as possible. We want our waste to be reduced as much as possible. We want our carbon footprint to be as small as possible. We're looking to do things in a way where, yes, we are indoors, but we're doing it responsibly. We're not wasting. We're not putting harmful chemicals down the drain. Everything that we do is either being reused or it's organic and safe to go into here.
Okay, so then let's go a little bit into that, right? So there's the nutrients that we put in the plant, but then there's also pest management, right? And there's the ways that we could handle pest management. I get a case of aphids or thrips. Uh-oh, I need to deal with that. Now, of course, I can go to the counter in my local grow store and pick some powerful crap off the shelf that would knock anybody out, let alone a little insect, pretty much kill anybody. And then spray that on my plants and then put that on the shelf, put a phony label on it, and then say, you know, fair trade, clean, so on and so forth. Of course, the consumers, they're not considering whether somebody's using that, because if I'm looking at something like this, which again, this is living organic soil, but there's indoor too that looks just nice, right? But we might not necessarily know what they're using on that plant, right? So while it might look aesthetically pleasing, what is it doing to you on the inside, right?
And that's a huge thing, that the users, the patients, the people that are just buying cannabis, that whole side of the industry, it's something that isn't even really recognized. And people aren't even thinking, well, gee, that cannabis really made me feel funny. I guess I just don't like that. Instead of maybe questioning, I wonder who grew that and how they grew it and what they were doing. These are questions that don't even really come to mind a lot of times. And it's sad, and it's a reflection of the culture of people have their home gardens with they grow their vegetables and tomatoes, and they're growing it with Miracle-Gro, and they're growing it with these chemicals that they don't even know that they're harmful, and it's definitely dangerous to ingest. So people need to be educated on that. And that's part of why I do what I do as well, because people are always asking me, Sam, why is your weed so good? And it comes from that we will never spray anything bad that will affect anything of your experience. The end product will always be perfect, because we're never going to spray it with something that wouldn't be. So I take pride in my pest management regimen, that I, you know, have everything ready, all organically done, whether it's from essential oils or whatever you want to do. But I have a whole list of things that I can do for my plants just in case anything were to happen. And it's kind of the name of the game is prevention, where you don't want that to happen. But if it were to happen, I can confidently tell you that I can handle that problem without poisoning you.
That's making my mouth water, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. So that being said, we'll take a little break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about more, just a story, something that brought Sam to the space, because we all know cannabis professionals that exist in this space. There's a story behind it that brought them in, and that's where we'll go into that. So we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And hello, everyone. We're back. I'm Johnny Tsunami. This is Planet Paco Lolo, your world of cannabis. If you missed our first part of the show, our first half, we were sitting down with one of my good friends, as well as fellow cultivator, Sammy Snips. He actually took this photo right here. This was a Sammy Snips photo. Sammy and I also have a shared passion for photography. And this was something that we did. We were trimming. So one of those things that you do on the farm is the harvest. And the harvest is draining. And so, but one thing I remember, though, is that it was that big step where after you finish and you accomplish that first round grow, there's that badge of courage that kind of comes with, wow, we did it. We got through it. It was a long season. Of course, this was in the outdoor realm, so it's even longer. And we made it through. And so that, to me, is a nice little piece here. I also have a picture here of Mr. Sammy doing
some IPMs,
some pest management right there. And look at the size of those beefy plants. I think those were the Shriekers.
Yep, I think so.
Those were the Shriekers.
Yep.
So, you know, thank you for coming back. You know, we were talking about living organic soil. That was the last thing, right? Most people would look at this and say, what the heck? What is this? They don't get this. This was like artwork, me being very bored, but being creative at the same time. And all those little tiny amendments that we put in that soil. So when we finished in the last episode, we talked about how, you know, we were raising those plants from being little babies all the way up, and the conditions that we set them in. And then from there, how I went back to New Jersey, started consulting, and you have continued to plant those little seeds, and they're growing, and so, you're bottling it up, and you're doing great. So that being said, let's go into the next segment of the show, which is the story, a personal story, a narrative, so to speak. When you think about your life and how you came into cannabis, and you're very much like me, we've known each other for quite some time, way before the farm. But cannabis was very much a part of our lives. And it's been there for a long time. And I know I'm grateful for it. And I always say, you want to be a proponent, you got to own it. You got to throw yourself out there on the chopping block. And you've definitely done that with Snips Co., holding your ground in Maine. And I'll also point out, too, that while Maine is a very beautiful state with beautiful people, they're also very protective of their state. So it takes a long time for somebody to come from out of state to get that respect. And I believe now at this point, Sammy Snips has found his rhythm and now it's turning. And he's very much immersed in not only the legislation, but being an advocate and making sure that the medical program stays intact and that those people that are part of that program, as well as their patients, are taken care of. So now let's talk a little bit. Why did you get into cannabis? Tell me a little bit.
So I'm 28 years old right now, and I've been using cannabis since I was 12 years old. So that's about 16 years of just falling in love over and over again with this plant. Anyone who knows me personally knows that I'm the weed guy. I've been that guy. I was the weed kid that your parents warned you about when we were younger in grade school. I've always been that person. I've always been someone who was correlated with cannabis. I've always been someone who's always just, any questions, it's always been come to me. And now that I'm a licensed caregiver and I have my own cannabis company, it's fulfilling. And I can't deny that. And the people that have been with me through the whole journey that have seen that, and for better or for worse, have saw the end of that, you know, that path, and it's a good one. And I wasn't just some kid just getting high and goofing off. I was, but I was doing other stuff too at the same time. And, you know, that's what's so special to me is that I've been doing this for 16 years. I've been helping people with cannabis. I've been a caregiver for the better half of 16 years. And whether it's licensed and sanctioned by their government or not, I help people and make sure that they get the meds that they need. And that's something that I'm very proud of. You know, whether you're someone who has chemo and needs help, or you're someone who's just having difficulties in social situations and you need someone to talk to, you need something to help you get through those situations, it's an alternative. And that's why I do this. I don't think I'm smart enough to be a doctor. I don't think I could have ever done anything like that. But this is my way of helping people, where you don't have to be a genius to do it. You just have to work really hard and have a heart. And anyone can be successful in the cannabis industry if you have those two things.
So let's elaborate a little bit on that. Think of a story of a patient that you've helped specifically. You don't have to say any names, of course. But what were they really suffering from? And what did you recommend to them? And maybe even furthermore, how did you help them through the process?
Sure. So what I do is, and I am proud to say that I do this, is that I meet with my patients. I consult with them for whether it's 20 minutes, it could be 6 hours. I've sat in patients' homes for 5-6 hours just listening to their problems. And that's something that I have no problem doing, assuming that I have the time to do it, is that if I have time, I will always go to my patients and make house calls. I'll always talk to them. And so I've got a lot of patients with a lot of very interesting stories. One specifically, one of my patients who has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And long story short, she's in a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain. And just going to her home and listening to her talk when doctors won't give her the time of day, and being able to help her form a plan, a dosage plan of cannabis, and to week by week follow her steps and see how she's doing. To go from a woman who has just been in her bed for years, bedridden, can't work, can't do anything, can't help her children with things, to be able to take her kids to music concerts and dance with them at parties, I consider that all worth it. And those are the kinds of stories that I'm working with here. These are the kinds of people that I'm helping. I'm not just giving to some kids so they can slack off and have fun. I'm doing this because I care and I believe that cannabis has a place in medicine. And with the right people like myself steering them, we do a lot of really amazing things with the cannabis plant.
So with someone that was, how old is this woman that you you know, you were
she's about 40 years old.
Yeah, she's 40 years old. And I only bring this up because I think what's important that this show is about removing the stigmas, the taboos, the stereotypes. It's about educating people. Right. This is why it was very special for me to start this show with you, because you were somebody that dove into this, even though I would agree we were both doing, we were helping people with cannabis years before that we went on to the farm. But it was very important and special to me to have you come on, especially as our first guest, because I knew that you were passionate about this. So when I think about it and I say to myself, oh my goodness, you know, what's happening in the recreational facilities is you're going in and you're just purchasing cannabis. Perhaps a bud tender is saying, oh, this, that, or the other thing, depending on the facility. But it's not really the kind of attention that you're talking about. And also, too, I think it's important to mention, okay, it's a 40-year-old woman with kids. The stigma and the stereotype of like, oh, well, cannabis users are just, you know, slackers and druggies and all this and the other thing. I mean, listen, I wake up very early in the morning. I'm an avid fitness fanatic. My routine before I go to the gym, a cup of caffeine and a nice cannabis joint together. And I walk on my hands and I'll do all kinds of stuff that people can't normally do straight.
Sure. Sure. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen
it. So, and many of other people have. So, and they listen, they say to me, how does that happen? Does it matter? How does it happen? I mean, and listen, how many people do I know that are on Vyvanse that are professionals, right? But it's okay because it's Vyvanse and you can pop it and it'll keep you focused. Needless to say, it's a synthesized material and free radicals will sit in the body. We all know that we all have endocannabinoid receptors inside of our bodies that allow us to absorb cannabis in a way that it doesn't leave free radicals. So when I think about the 40-year-old woman, I think about many 40-year-old women or an 80-year-old woman or an 80-year-old man or a child who's suffering, from grand mal seizures at the age of 6 years old or from birth, so to speak. And I think that's where it's important. So we look at this person. Now, how did you walk her through the process?
So
where did you start, you know, when you're thinking dosage?
Yeah, I had to really understand her background and what kind of medication she was on. And she was being pumped with morphine. That was modern medicine's solution to her problems, was to pump her full of morphine and take away her life, essentially. And so my goal was to find a dosage of cannabis, which is much less intense and strong than morphine, that would work for someone. And what I ended up doing was doing about a 3-to-1 ratio of THC to CBD, the primary cannabinoids that really were able to work for her, strain specific, of course. So we had to work through a bunch of different strains and phenotypes of those strains until we found things that stuck. And every patient, that's what you have to go through. Like any medication, you just have to find what works for that specific patient. No, it's never going to be the same for two patients. Everyone's different. And so for this specific patient, it was a lot of listening and figuring out through trial and error what works for her, until about 2 months in, we were able to get that dialed in.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're going to continue this a little bit after the break. We have a break coming up again. See how it's just flying. You know, it's just too easy to talk about how important this plant is to us as a community. Thank you, Sam. We will be back after this short break. Planet Paco Lolo.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Back. I'm Johnny Tsunami, your host of Planet Paco Lolo. We're in the last segment of our show. If you haven't caught up, we are here with Sammy Snips. We talked about legislation, cultivation, and helping out others, especially in the medical marijuana program where Sammy resides in the beautiful state of Maine, vacation land, if you haven't seen it on the license plate. And for those who are really trying to learn a little bit more about the plant, or perhaps are business professionals that deal with the plant, whatever it may be, that's what this show is about. It's about uncovering the stigmas, the stereotypes, and the taboos. And I think after today's conversation with Sam, I feel better knowing that people like him exist in the medical marijuana space, that they truly care about what they're giving to people, and that the plant has more meaning when it's given to someone who's passionate about the plant itself. And even furthermore, in the last segment, how he was battling and working his way through helping different patients who suffer from many different debilitating diseases from many different age groups as well. So Sam, welcome back. Thank you again for coming on the show. This is our last segment, segment number four, where we have the message or the opportunity. What are you trying to say to the audience? And when we finish, just before, maybe we touch upon it a little bit. When you're helping someone with a medical issue, what do you think is most important when you're prescribing medical cannabis? What's that message?
What's most important is that it actually works. People use cannabis for many different reasons, and part of that is recognizing when you should use cannabis and when there might be something else that you need to do. And I'm the first person to tell someone if they're not meant for cannabis, if I can see that after trial and trial and trial, it's just leading them to anxiety and other things like that. You have to understand that cannabis isn't for everyone. And right now we live in a culture where people like to kind of jam it down everyone's throats. And this is coming from someone who's dedicated their life to the cannabis plant. And I'm saying that we need to kind of let people go into cannabis on their own way. And we need to educate those people. And so what I suggest is that people pay attention. They pay attention to what kind of cannabis they're using, who's growing it, where they're growing it, how they're growing it. These are questions that every medical marijuana patient in the country should be asking themselves when they buy marijuana. And unfortunately, I find that these questions are not being asked. And then people get sick, whether it's consuming mold or heavy metal products with heavy metals in the end product. There's a lot of ways where cannabis can still be harmful if not done responsibly, whether it's on the cultivation side, the processing side, all of that. And I just want people to pay attention to what's going on and to ask questions, because that's okay. You can ask your dispensary, you can ask your local bud tender a question. And if you don't think they have an adequate response to that question, you don't need to shop there. You can go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want people to understand, is that cannabis can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
So two things came out when you said that that came to mind. One is the first, and this is what's happening, is that the bigger conglomerates are coming in and they're purchasing all the mom and pop shops. And when you said mold, so one of those multi-state operators, I had the pleasure of doing a private walkthrough of the facility back end. It was a New Jersey-based facility, we'll go unnamed. But I had a private viewing where I was able to walk through the aisles where the plants were being taken care of. Now, the person who was walking me through was the money guy. The money guys, more often than not, don't really know anything about the plant. They're just there to raise funds to make a business. And when I walked through this facility, which, by the way, was tens of thousands of square feet, I immediately was able to identify mold, pest, and other issues. 3 years later, and I said to the gentleman who gave me the private viewing, I said to him, you know, this place is going to have a mold breakout, or the facility is destined to have a mold breakout of some kind. 3 years later, in the newspaper, that facility came out with a mold outbreak, and I can only imagine how much material they had given out that was, let's say, tainted. And it was a medical facility, but again, it was a multi-state operator. It was a small facility that was then absorbed by a larger title, and then things went south because the multi-state operators have enough money to just continue to throw money in there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the product coming out is going to be quality. So that was the first thing that came out. The second thing I think is, what's the message that you want to say to maybe people in Maine as well? And maybe that larger message that should resonate, but I think it's important when I look at Maine, sometimes it's a good, when we look at COVID, for example, there was a lot of businesses that were destroyed because of COVID. But many of those businesses were destined for failure because they weren't being run properly. And essentially COVID exacerbated those issues that business was struggling from already, and it wiped them out. It kind of reset and wiped the slate clean. So when I think of when a state turns recreational, there's a lot of medical caregivers in there that will get absorbed because they probably weren't doing the best that they can do. Because let's face it, just because you have a medical license doesn't necessarily mean that you're following the best practices, although you are. But I do know that others may not be, or that maybe their cultivation aspect is great, but their business acumen is very poor. And then all of a sudden they get bought out. And what will happen is that it's almost survival of the fittest, that perhaps it's a good thing that the state turns rec, and the ones that will survive, like yourself in the medical regime, will only be able to absorb more of the medical market, because I'm sure many medical caregivers are going to be washed away. But I think that part of that is that they weren't prepared fully. So when we think about what you do in Maine, because I really want people to understand that if they go to Maine, one, they should come see you. And two, there's plenty of people in Maine right now that have medical cards. So I would love for you to kind of just give that message to that audience and tell them a little bit about why they should come in and purchase cannabis from you.
Sure. I think that if you're looking for an experience with your cannabis, something that leaves you with feelings, with emotions, you should give the craft cannabis a shot, because I think most people are used to a mass-produced product. You know, there's a difference between the two, and I implore people, if they haven't had a chance to try my cannabis or someone like myself, their product, to give it a try, because I cannot tell you how many people have just been completely convinced. And once they try my product, they will never go back. And then they go, you know what? Do you know any other growers like you too? Let me get into this network. And all of a sudden people realize there's a network of smaller growers who exist, but we sell out. As soon as we do the legislation, we can't grow as much as we can, the demand wants. So we sell out immediately. And that's what's happening up here in Maine. And so my recommendation is that if you want to try my cannabis or just higher quality cannabis, get ready, pay attention, go on Instagram, watch for the drops, because you know, we'll let you guys know when we do our drops, and you got to be on it quick, because day of, everything will go.
Beautiful. And I also, before you were telling me that in the next couple of weeks, we should be expecting a nice little boom of some activity as far as your social networks go and everything of that nature, which of course I wish you the best. I think that you're going to have great success. I believe that branding is very important when it comes to business in general. So I think there's an opportunity. Are you looking for anybody to add to your team while we're here? Might as well throw it out there. If there's anybody that you're looking for, maybe put it out there right now. There might be somebody listening that might be able to fill those shoes.
To be honest, my inboxes are pretty filled with people, whether people from my past that I know personally or don't even know at all, people that live in this country or that don't live in America that are offering their services. And so that's something that I'm realizing is amazing, that people want to get into cannabis. And it doesn't sound very sexy, but go to college, study agriculture, study business, get experience in those fields, because people like me aren't going to exist much longer, as in the entrepreneur who can jump into this and just do what I'm doing. It's getting harder and harder to get your foot in the door.
That's a great message. And I think that will be a great way to end the show, because all the people that we're going to talk to as guests on this show, the professionals, had to take a risk. No matter what realm that they were in, it was just something that they had to do. And by putting themselves out there, whether it's on LinkedIn or just in general, I think it's important that we have that. So, Sam, thank you so much. I'm Johnny Tsunami with Sammy Snips. This was our first episode of Planet Paco Lolo, your world of cannabis, a less taboo view. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Howdy, I am Joseph. Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.